You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. I'm Kieran Moran, Managing Director of Resource Industry Media. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Queensland and Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Anton Guiney, the director of the Guiney Group. And as 21-year-old Sparky, Anton survived a near-fatal workplace incident which changed his life forever and got him into the current business that he now facilitates. Over the last 15 years, Anton has worked with over 150 businesses globally and has dedicated himself to safety thought leadership. The Guiney Group have developed and implemented methodologies which create lasting and impactful safety change through a combined approach to psychological and physical safety. Their mission is to make safety safe, that is, safe to talk about, safe to engage in, and safe to report about. Welcome, Anton, to the program.
Hey, Kieran, thanks for having me, mate. Great to be on and great to be connecting with your listeners.
Now, you are out there quite a bit and you are well known, but let's go straight to the beginning in a way, and not that this brought you straight into the business that you're currently doing now, but the story of yourself as a 21-year-old Sparky and you survived a near-fatal workplace incident. What happened there?
Yeah, mate, I did something really silly, Kieran, like when you're young and bulletproof and invincible and unbreakable and you think nothing will ever happen and nothing will go wrong until it actually does, because I was silly enough, mate, to put another priority before my own safety, unfortunately. And so what that meant was that I was trying to save money, I was trying to save time, you know, like I wasn't even in a full-time job at the time, at the end of the day, I was a contractor, right? And so I was sort of trying to impress Kieran. And I was trying to save 5 minutes, but doing a 5 minute job, save 5 minutes. And then I went home from work about 5 weeks later. Now, what I'd actually done was I was working with the tradesman and we were asked to do some work in a switchboard. And I was asked by my tradesperson to measure in that switchboard where this component was going to go. And so I used a steel ruler to measure in that switchboard, which was isolated, mind you, and still, because of my youthful exuberance, and probably lack of experience, I actually didn't understand that the steel ruler was thin, flexible, and able to get into places that were not isolated, basically in behind the main switch, in behind the board. And so this thing erupted, mate, it blew up, it just exploded. It was, you know, like a bomb, I suppose, for want of a better word, going off in my face, and about 20,000 degrees C heat, which just blew my some face off, blew skin on my hands off. I got blown back 6 feet from the switchboard. And as I pushed myself up off the ground, you know, I tore all of the burnt, dead skin off my right hand, which was pretty ugly. And then ended up in the intensive care unit to make sure I wasn't badly burnt internally. And then it was off to the burns unit in Brizzy where they, as part of the healing process, Kieran proceeded to, you know, start tearing skin off, for example, on a daily basis to, in inverted commas, quote unquote, promote new skin growth, which was interesting and painful and pretty gross to look at. And that sort of went on for about 5 weeks until all of the dead skin, which doesn't actually separate from the new skin underneath it immediately, it's got to be forcibly removed. So that was pretty, let's say that was pretty yuck, right? So that was sort of the story of that particular Tuesday morning about 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And yeah, it didn't end well for me, mate. Well, probably did end well, depending on how you look at it. As well as ending up in intensive care, I guess I still had my life, which was probably something I look back on and I'm very grateful for.
So that has actually moved you into the way that you now do work. How was that transition moving to where you are now?
Mate, I've got to tell you. So the one thing that I suppose for me really shifted my life a little bit was this whole emotional, psychological type shift that I had, because I got scared of electricity. I got scared of switchboards instantaneously after that incident. And people say you just get back up on the horse. And I'm here to tell you, once you've had an incident or an accident, I suppose, for want of a more specific word, it's not that easy. Like, you can't just get back up on the horse, or I couldn't. And it took me, I kid you not, for all your listeners out there, some of them will be able to relate to this, Kieran, it took me 10 years, mate, to get my head around what had actually happened. Now, in that 10 years, even in the burns unit, I can still remember making a decision in the burns unit that I don't want to be an electrician anymore. This is just too scary. I was an electrician. I've had all my skin torn off because I did something stupid in this trade. I just don't want to do it anymore. And so I made the decision then, literally in the burns unit. I kid you not, that I made that decision then. The challenge was that I didn't know anything else, and I wish I just had the mindset that I have now. I just changed careers. And I would have done something different, though, because being an electrician was all I knew. And so I spent 3 years on the tools. I was working on mobile equipment, though, so I wasn't working specifically, you know, on fixed plant, which is where it happened. So I sort of managed to psychologically get myself up every morning, get myself to work, even though I was still scared when I was working on some of this equipment. And then I couldn't wait to get off the tools, mate. So I studied and studied. I did a HR degree because I thought I'd learn about people and I'd learn about leadership. I probably didn't really. I learned how to write position descriptions, which was interesting. And then during that 10-year period, I sort of climbed the ladder of corporate success, which was pretty cool. And I got into superintendent and manager roles and leadership and understood the importance and the value of leadership. So 10 years later, what you'd probably call PTSD now, I sort of suffered through that a little bit. And finally, 10 years later, when I came back to Gladstone after being away for 10 years, people wanted to know about the incident because I hadn't seen it for 10 years. Hey, I heard you blew your face off. Hey, you blew your, yeah, this, whatever. So then I started talking about it, mate, and haven't stopped, really.
No, and it's led you into a way, into a career. And so just let us know exactly how does, well, learning from that incident now apply to the business that you do of the Ginning Group?
Yeah, great call. So how does one go from sort of the burns unit to say, yeah, a speaker and consultant? Well, what actually happened was, it was really interesting, and it was a one-off thing. It was like, now, once I got my head around what happened here, and I was asked to speak at a safety meeting, and I said, yeah, I'm happy to do that. And then I put a bit of a but on it, and the but was this, that I don't want to do the normal safety topics that people are doing, like the normal. And I remember back then, some of the topics at these meetings were, you know, how to put on sunscreen properly or how to indicate off roundabouts. I'll never forget those topics. And I thought, you know what, if I want to speak at a safety event, which it sort of was on this particular site that I was working on, I need to be able to tell my personal story. I need to be able to add value, you know. I want to change something. I want to make a difference. And so I said, can I tell my personal story? And people said, yeah, we'd love to hear it. And, of course, when they heard it, they loved it. And I sort of went into some gruesome detail and told them what it was like to, you know, not be able to wipe your backside by yourself and no one does it like you, and, you know, what it's like to have all your skin torn off and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and once I delivered it once, I sort of went, holy mackinolly, you know, you can actually connect with other humans from this public speaking space and maybe make a difference and maybe change their mindset. And when I get to do it a second time on that same site, basically I walked into my boss's office and gave him a resignation and said, hey, I'm going to become like a speaker. And he went, really, that's interesting. And so I did. And then I came home and told my lovely wife that it was we. Once I got home, it became a wee thing, and my lovely wife of nearly 30 years now said, well, I don't know if it's we just yet, champ. It's sort of more you at the moment. And, you know, she said, we've got two kids, and we had two mortgages at the time. Two kids, two mortgages, and only one adult living in the house, apparently, she said. And I said, trust me, babe. And that was 17 years ago. So how did I go from that incident to this through 10 years of trying to grapple with it and get a learning from it, and then finding out that if you're in front of a group of people, Kieran, you can actually influence their mindset. You can get inside their heart and hopefully change their behaviour so that they'll learn from my experience and maybe be a bit safer.
So a lot of the work that you do is with industry, so the resource and construction industry and so forth. And as you said there, you do go into workplace and gives the talks. And you said that in some ways that, you know, it's been able to sort of connect with people, and that's sort of one of the main things that you do so they understand the message. So what is the message that you are giving out to a lot of these talks that you do?
Mate, we work in the space here at TDG where safety meets leadership. And what that really means is it means that we make safety safe. Now, when we talk about safety at TGG, what we think of, what we're meaning is psychological safety and physical safety, right? So we've expanded, I guess, our message from just be safe at work to, hey, leaders. Because most of our work these days, Kieran, is working with leaders. We do a fair bit of work at the team level. At the same time, though, we are really focused on how we can work with leaders to create high-performing teams and help them make safety safe in their teams. And what I mean by all of that is that leaders that have psychologically safe teams, so what's that mean? It means teams that feel safe, that are emotionally taken care of, that are listened to, that are valued. See, psychological safety is about emotional safety. It's about being able to speak up, whether it's a safety issue or whether it's a business issue, whether it's a new idea. So we help leaders create psychological safety, which is an emotional piece for their teams, and, you know, bring that care factor back into their leadership. And then we also work with the leaders on the physical safety side. So we help them, you know, get their languaging right, get their narrative right around what it means to actually engage in the safety process. And so making safety safe psychologically and physically is all about making it safe to speak up, to report, to actually care for one another, to actually put yourself out there and make a difference and be the shining light, be the example for others to follow and lead by your own example. We have a four-stage process where we talk about the lead program. You're going to learn about others and learn about yourself. Why do you do what you do? Engage with other humans, engage with your team, engage with people so that you can actually get to know them on a different level and articulate what's important to you, like we are now. You know, we're speaking, we're telling a story, we're articulating our why, not what we're doing, but how we do it, and it's why we do it as well. And then it's also around that demonstrating behavior. You know, what is it that you want to see from your team? What is it that as a leader you're going to demonstrate so that when your team sees you as much as hears you, because it's more about seeing rather than hearing when it comes to leadership, what is your team going to see in your behavior? Is it high integrity? Is it care factor? Is it taking the time to listen? Is it active listening? Is it all those other leadership skills that people need to create that psychological and physical safe environment for their teams to thrive and for their teams to become high performing?
One of the things that you did say in there was get your narrative right. One of the things that I do in the introduction to the podcast, of course, is tell your business story right. And a lot of things are created around the narrative, and you also mentioned in there the story. So what did you mean exactly in relation to the narrative, and how important is that?
Oh, mate, like, you know, the way that we articulate, so narrative is obviously, as you know, the words that we use and the importance of our languaging. And you know, when you look at communication theory, Kieran, what we now know is that 7% of the message that we share is in words, and 55% of it's in our body language. And then the 38% remaining is about how we use our voices and how we use our speed or our tonality and volume. And so get this, so that's 7%. So the words that people hear, the narrative that leaders use, is so important, because people buy into it. They'll say to a leader 6 months later, hey, you said this, or you committed to that, or hey, I asked you about something and you responded like this. And leaders regularly say to me, Kieran, I kid you not, that they say, hey, Anton, these people really hang off every word. I said, yeah, I know. That's because they're listening to you. Now, there's two parts to that. One is getting the narrative right, so that when we're talking about safety, we are what we call congruent. Now, what congruent means is so that our behavior lines up with our words. And so, our beliefs line up with our behavior. So what I mean by that is that if we say safety is important, we've actually got to demonstrate that. So when the time comes, we've actually got to be able to articulate that in such a way that says, hey, safety is important. Not, hey, safety is important, and then, oh, by the way, just get it done, you know, just I'm going to look away while you get this done. That's not safety leadership. That's narrative that says, hey, you do whatever it is we need to do to get the job done. See, that's not safety narrative. That's not safety leadership. It's not safety speaking. Now, the other part of this, Kieran, is that, yeah, just imagine if 7% of the messages and the words that people say or leaders say, and people hang off the words, just imagine how important their actions are, their body language are, how important their voice is, as my voice goes up and down. And so it's not only what you say, the narrative includes the words, it also includes how you say it. So what passion is behind it. You know, energy is contagious, mate. If people don't feel safety, like if a leader doesn't feel it and hasn't bought in, their teams understand that.
And that's what's sort of extremely important, isn't it? To the point of where, so a lot of comments over the years that I've heard, and especially from some of the main industry or people who work in the main industry, look, you know, of course, everybody needs to come home at the end of the day. They're always talking about safety. We have the tool shops and so forth in the mornings and so forth before we go out there. But in the end, really, they're just making sure they don't get that insurance claim. They're just protecting themselves. In the end, they really don't care about their staff. And so in a way, with what you're saying there, is teaching the leader to be able to make sure that they do believe in it and they do project it and it does come through in everything that they do.
Well said, mate. And that was such a great summary. And leaders just have to be so careful, I suppose, of their languaging and so aware of how important what they say and how they say it is, that people don't actually listen as much as they watch. So our leaders are looking at our leaders for an example of how to behave. And so it starts with words and it finishes with an example, it finishes with behaviour. So, no, well said. And leaders need to understand their own belief system, because if they don't buy into strong leadership, if they don't buy into the safety process, guess what? They'll never, ever be able to fully engage another human being in the process that they haven't bought into. It's just psychologically impossible for us. It's like sales, you know. Salespeople, as we do some work with sales teams, and the worst salespeople don't believe in their product. They don't believe in what they're selling. And it's the same with a leader. If they don't believe in what they're communicating, it'll never come through and they'll never engage people in the process.
Well, that too, it would have to be some of the success of the Guinea Group. And as you said, when you first 17 years ago walked in the door and said to your wife, right, this is what we are going to do, to the point of how is it, you know, obviously you've learned a lot over those years, but and obviously it's also changed yourself. How has it sort of crafted your own idea of who you are and with what you do?
Oh, man, great. Thank you. Great question. So, what I learned over those 17 years that you need good people around you. So I'm very, 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 very fortunate. I've got an amazing wife. And in our business, I've got an amazing business manager who we've had for 10 years. And so I'm probably one of the most fortunate humans on planet Earth, that I've been lucky enough to find some amazing people that have just come on the journey and are just there, you know, no matter what. So that's really, 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 really important. So what have I learned is the power of collaboration, the power of team. I'll tell you the other thing that I learned here, and it's another why piece. You know, as I reflected on my leadership journey, I reflected not on the good leaders that I had, because I learned from them. What I reflected on was some of the poor leadership experiences I had. And we start our two-day leadership programs with, you know, who's the worst leader you've ever had and what did you learn from them? Because we can learn from leaders that potentially don't do great leadership work, if that makes sense. So we can actually learn what not to do. And so for me, reflecting back on, I guess, my time in the workplace, some of the toughest memories that I I had the one around the workplace incident that I had, which we unpacked earlier, and the second one was around some of the poor leadership experiences that I had. And that's, I guess, why we call it safety and leadership now, because we work one-on-one with leaders and we do, you know, public leadership programs or leadership training so that we can help leaders create high-performing teams and sort of not make some of the mistakes of those poor leaders. So I guess from a learning perspective, two things. One, get a great team. Two, learn from all of your experiences in life and learn in such a way that you can share that with other humans to make a difference, which is a really big part of what we do. We actually, you know, we measure our results at each workshop. We say, have you grown? What have you learned? So we're really particular on making sure that we actually add value. And I think if there's a third one, would probably have to be something around never give up. I know that's three simple words and it's pretty cliche, though. It's just so important, man. Like, you know, we've seen the business environment in Gladstone go up and down over the years, and you know, in business, probably lost more than I've made in all seriousness. And you know, if you came to me as a for some business coaching, which we don't really do, someone asked me how to make $1 million. I heard this great quote this morning. A guy said that his mentor said, "I can't help you make $1 million. I can stop you from losing $9 million." And I think that'd probably be a way that I'd coach a business leader. I'd probably say, you know, don't make the same mistakes that I did in business, because it's created some resilience and I've had to tough it out at different times. And, you know, you sort of question yourself a lot of the time. You've got to be really, really strong to keep going on the journey some days. And so I've had some pretty tough days in business, though it's all been worth it. And it's been such a great journey, man. Yeah, and it's been a life changer. And something that I'm going to do until I'm about 1,004 years old, I reckon. I can't ever see myself stopping, so I just love it.
Well, it's good to hear that, and as you said, like, resilience is very important within business. You get your hits, you get your knocks, and the whole key is to keep on going and believe in yourself. And obviously the I has now obviously turned into the we with your wife, which is great to hear. But we're actually at the end of the podcast, Anton. It does go very quick. For those that would like to get in touch with the Guinea Group, how can they do that?
Mate, www.antonguinea.com.au or the team at antonguinea.com.au. www.antonguinea.com.au or the team as an email, the team at antonguinea.com.au. And we'll pick that up and we'll respond within 48 hours and we'll make sure that we help anyone on this podcast. If they reach out to that email address, I'll flick them a free ebook of one of the books that I've written. So I've been lucky enough to become an international best-selling author over time. So I'll send them some ebooks if people are readers. So anyone that sends us a quick note to that email address will get a free copy of an ebook if they'd like it.
Well, that's the other side of Anton with being an author as well. But thank you very much for joining us today.
Mate, thanks for having me, Kieran. You're doing some great work out there, and keep up the good work, mate. I love the connecting business. I love resource industry media and the fact that, you know, you're helping businesses like myself, like ours, get out there and get in front of other people. And keep up the good work, mate, at your end too, bro. Thanks for having us.
Cheers. Thanks, Anton.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.